Thanks for tuning in to Sermoncast, the preaching ministry of Christ Church of Amherst. You can learn more about Christ Church by visiting our website at ccnh.org.
Good morning. Good morning. Some of you may be wondering, when in the world, who is Gordon MacDonald? Does he own hamburgers? Something like that. The MacDonald stands are MCs. I'm an MAC. I was informed a long time ago that in my Scots clan, we always fought for good issues down through the centuries, but we always lost. So that's my heritage. I don't know how many of you I've ever had the chance to meet personally. Gail and I, my wife Gail, who's with me, have spent a large part of her adult years in New England, in Lexington, Massachusetts, at Grace Chapel. And in the last years, have spent most of our time allied to Denver Seminary out in Colorado, where we commute on a regular basis, and I serve with the highfalutin title of chancellor, which means you do anything the president wants you to do. A good life, one that's been very happy for the both of us. It's a rich experience to meet with you this morning and to be a part of this worship. Love the way you sing. It's been wonderful to see all these small, beautiful children running around with so much energy. You really are a young church, and that's a great thing. I want to look for a few moments, and I'm going to watch your time carefully. In the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, there's a set of stories which John Mark, who apparently wrote this whole gospel, chose to give to his readers with the attempt of giving to us some understanding of the nature of Jesus in everyday life. In Mark chapter 5, what you have is a series of four stories, all of which seem to follow some of the same basic themes, although each story is about a different kind of person with a different kind of outcome. But if you're a follower of the Lord and you are looking on a regular basis for some kind of courage or strength, or you deal with the question on a regular basis, if Jesus is Lord of my life, he is at the center of my being, is there power enough there to give me the courage and the direction I need for everyday life? And these are the kind of stories that answer a question like that for me. I turn again and again to this passage. I review the words, read the verses, try to imagine myself inside of these stories, watching what's going on. And without fail, almost always, when I get through reading them again, I get a whole fresh new view of the Lordship of Jesus. And I'm hoping in those few Sundays that Gail and I will be with you in this month and next month that maybe we can look at a few of these stories. Maybe the best way to introduce them is to read to you a quote from, and some of you will know the name and many of you will probably not, one of the great jazz musicians in the 20th century was a man named Dave Brubeck. Many people called him the father of modern jazz. Brubeck was a very devout Roman Catholic Christian, played and led a mass in Manhattan for many, many years, every Sunday night. He was a man with a great intellect, but most of all known for his powerful musicianship. He died about a year ago, and not long before he died, a newspaper reporter asked him this question: how would you sum up your life if it came to an end rather quickly? Which is an interesting question, which leaves one a little bit restless if it were to be asked of you or me. How would you sum up your life in a few words? Let me read to you what Dave Brubeck said. I was very impressed when I read it. He said, sum up my life? Well, I opened doors. After giving it some serious thought, I don't think I can improve on those three words, Brubeck said, because I do think that is the most important work I have done in my life. Open doors. Musically, racially, socially, mentally, and spiritually. I've been an opener of doors. When I read those words, I thought to myself, first of all, so if you had five words, Gordon, how would you sum up your life? Now let me put the question on your shoulders, because I don't want to handle it alone. If someone asked you, as they asked Brubeck, five words, he took three, you get five, how would you sum up your life? Now let's go back to the scriptures. If Jesus was asked, how would he sum up his life when he was a part of earth, the part of humanity for those few years, 2,000 years ago, how would he sum up life? Well, I don't think Jesus would be bothered by using Brubeck's words. I opened doors. In fact, he must have loved that metaphor, because in one place he said, I am the door. In other places he talked about the door being opened or shut. He was very door conscious, you see. Now here in Mark chapter 5, there are three stories which give us, I think, magnificent illustrations of what it means to open the door in the life of someone whose door has been slammed shut. The word that comes to me when I think of closed doors is the word desperation. Maybe more than a few of us in this room know a moment in our lives when we were brutally, literally desperate. Think back and ask yourself, have you ever faced total desperation? I've struggled, frankly, to find any times that I would list as total desperation, because in most cases in my life, there's always seemed to have been a crack in the door, or there was someone who was willing to try to open the door to whatever it was that made me desperate at that time. But I do remember one dramatic event where I saw a man for a moment. I don't know what his name was. I've never seen him again. But I saw desperation in his eyes like I've never seen it before. I was in Ethiopia. I was in Ethiopia at a time when starvation was rampant and thousands of people were dying. One night I was in bed in a little hut out in the countryside. When I went to bed, the countryside around me was bare. There was no one there. It was just desert. But when I woke up at 5 in the morning, there were several thousand people there. They had shown up over the night, and they had just formed a huge crowd sitting, waiting. I was with the World Vision team, and their job was to figure out who of these people was desperate enough to be so hungry that they needed to be fed. Someone tied me up to a doctor who was going from Ethiopian family to Ethiopian family, and I watched what he was doing as he tried to qualify people as to whether some would be admitted to the feeding program that day or denied access, the door shut, to feeding. So I went along, and I watched as he would pick up some of the children in each family. He would examine them, and finally I said to him, tell me what you're doing. He said, well, I'm examining the weakest child in each family for signs of malnutrition. If the malnutrition is there and it's obvious, we'll let the family in. If the malnutrition is not advanced, the family has to wait, which sounds to me a bit bizarre, but when you've got limited resources, that's the way you have to do things. I said, what are you looking for? He said, well, we feel the hair. How fine is the hair? Is it starting to fall out? We examine the eyes, because much disease begins in the eyes. We pinch the skin to see how sturdy it is. And he mentioned one or two other things. And then I watched him as he went from family to family to family, picking up children. You can imagine being in one of these families, watching this doctor examine your child and make a decision as to whether or not you and your family are going to eat that day. And there came a moment when the doctor did a terrible thing. He picked up a small child and he handed it to me. He said, you make the decision. To this day, standing here in front of you, I will never forget what happened when the eyes of the father of that family locked onto mine. Pleading eyes, because he knew what was going on. He knew that my decision would open the door for his family. That's one of the most awful decisions I've ever had to make in my life. Now back to the text in the book of Mark, chapter 5. The story opens up with Jesus in a boat with his disciples. Those of you who've done Sunday school and Bible stories long enough remember the story of Jesus in the storm with the disciples. And he says to the wind and the waves, "Peace, be still." The storm abates. The disciples are saved. And they go to the other side of the Lake of Galilee. In Mark chapter 5, verse 1, it opens up with the aftermath of that storm story. As they get out of the boat, Mark says, a man came running toward them. Well, let me read you the text of Scripture. It's good to get into this, the Word. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes, and when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he'd often been chained with hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out, and he would cut himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and he fell on his knees in front of him. Good place to stop. Let me try to use a bit of imagination and build a picture of what we've just read. Jesus gets out of the boat. Down from the hillside comes this man. I would imagine he's one of the hideous looking people you would ever or I would ever see. He's totally out of control. His personality has been twisted and warped. He has a superhuman strength about him. He is past civilization. In the Bible, using the Bible's language, we call him a demon-possessed person because somehow the powers of evil have taken over and dominated this man's life, and no one can do anything with him anymore. I think back, and the text doesn't say this, so we're on imagination right now, but it can't be too far from this. How did he become that way? How did he become a picture of the worst of the worst of the worst that human beings can sink to? How did that happen? Well, my beginning answer is I'm not sure. But I can quite imagine that there must have been a time when this man lived in a nearby village. He probably had a great sense of humor, loved a lot of fun, probably was a person who maybe played dirty tricks on people to get a rise from people. And when he was at the party always was elevated a bit, and all of it's fun because this guy was right out on the boundary lines of what was correct. He would do and say the things that nobody else would do. Perhaps he has a wife. Perhaps there are children. But as time goes by, this tendency on his part to do the uncivil things, the dangerous things, the things that are off color, the things that would bother most people, but they get a bit amused watching him. Little bit by little, it gets out of control. Now, slowly, he's not fun to have around anymore. He's dangerous. When he disagrees with people, perhaps he becomes violent, abusive. One would wonder if he beat his wife, if he beat his children, if sometimes in the village people just slinked away when they saw him coming. You don't want a person like that around. We read in the newspapers just in the last 2 days of this Florida family where a father killed his daughter and 6 of her children. It's a dreadful story. And you wonder, what was going on over the days and weeks and months as this thing reached its crescendo and then these awful things happened this week? Is this the same kind of thing that was going on there? My imagination continues. The town council must get together. What are we going to do with, and they name him. What are we going to do with him? He's a danger to us all. Well, let's get him out of town. Let's chain him up. Let's let nature's elements take care of him. So they get a bunch of guys together and they muscle him out of town. They chain him to a tree or something like that. Who knows what happens? They do the best they can to restrict this man, to get him out of sight. That's the way the world does a lot of things when problems get out of control. Get it out of our sight. And that's the man that Jesus meets that day. A man for whom nobody can do a thing. I doubt that any of us in this room have ever seen a person who is living to that extreme. But the Bible gives us pictures of that from time to time. Desperate people who've lost control of their lives. And the question is, what happens when this man, with all of this behavior and all of this evil in his life, this man meets the Son of God, Jesus Christ? And in the next verses, you read about their encounter. What is your name? Jesus says to this man. And in a strange answer, the man doesn't say, my name is Bob or Joe or Jim or Michael. He says, my name is Legion, for we are many. The answer is not coming just simply from his mind. The answer is coming from the depths of his soul, speaking out of the layers upon layers upon layers of evil that have invaded his life and taken him over. We heard a few moments ago about people who are addicted. Perhaps in some way, addiction is a very good picture of the out-of-control man life that this man was living. We are legion. We are many. There's a Quaker writer by the name of Thomas Kelly who wrote years ago trying to describe the human condition. And in just a few words, he said this. I'm quoting him, quote, each one of us is a committee of selves, and each committee fights and competes every day for control of our lives. Think about that. Have you ever thought about yourself as many selves? The battle that often goes on in the soul for life's control. We are legion, we are many, the man says. And in the next moments that follow, Jesus speaks a word of power, a word from heaven. And this man is healed. The demons that had controlled this man are cast out. All of that ugliness, all of that anger, all of that violence, all of that addiction, all of that hatred disappears. Who of us wouldn't love to have a conversion experience like that? Many of us battle with various kinds of influences all of our lives. And we plead sometimes with Jesus, take it away. Save me from this or that. We are desperate. The door is locked shut. Who of us would ever go through all of life and not sometimes feel that in certain dimensions and directions of our lives, there's a door that's shut? Jesus, open the door. Clean me, cleanse me, rebuild me, renew me. Something like that happened on that shore. So the text goes on. Most of you would know the story. As the demons left this man, as all these many selves were cast out, they went into pigs which rushed down the hill and into the lake and were drowned, some 2,000 pigs. It must have been a devastating moment for the local economy. And in fact, when the word gets back to the village that something out here has happened to whatever his name is now, people come running out to see for themselves what has happened to this guy that we could do nothing about. I want to read you a verse that I've always thought is really powerful. As the people came and they came to Jesus, listen to these words. They saw the man who'd had the demons, three things, sitting there, dressed, and in his right mind. How many times had this man's wife and his children gone to bed at night and heard their husband and father screaming out on the hillside, shrieking, doing whatever demon-possessed people do? How many times had the kids seen their father in an afternoon, wanted to go toward him, but couldn't? How many times had a wife remembered the good days when she embraced her husband, when they had sweet talk, when they loved each other, but it was over? And now it comes back. The door is opened. and the three things that are said about this man on the other side of the healing that Jesus has given is he's sitting there. No longer is he running around wildly like an animal that's untamed. He's dressed. His dignity is back. He's not ashamed of himself anymore, and people do not feel that they need to avoid him out of sheer embarrassment, if nothing else. He's in his right mind. He can think. He can express himself emotionally. He can see beauty again. He can make sense out of life. He's in his right mind. Are his kids there? Do they see their dad for the first time in a long time, sitting there dressed and in his right mind? Are his friends there? Is his spouse there? Is his mother and father there? All we know in that moment is that a door has been opened. And the door has been opened by Jesus in the power of the Christ, who has promised the same kind of deliverance to all who run to him and seek him. There's one more thing in this story that fascinates me each time I read it. Some of the townspeople were not too excited about what had just happened. You'd think they would be, but they simply had a different definition of values. In fact, to put it bluntly, they valued the pigs that had died in the water more than they valued the restoration of this man and the opening of the door of his life. Interesting how in many generations down through the history of the earth, people get their values all screwed up. And here's a good example. So, in their anger that they've lost these pigs, apparently, in their fearfulness as to who is this Jesus and what is he all about, they ask him to leave. And Jesus, who doesn't normally stick around in places where he's not invited, gets ready to leave. Here's the last verse I wanted to read. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Seems like something I'd like to do myself. So why doesn't Jesus invite him into the boat? Jesus did not let him, Mark says. But Jesus said, go home. Go home to your family, to your friends, and tell them what the Lord has done for you. This man would have enjoyed going on a perpetual Bible conference. He would have enjoyed basking in the shadow of Jesus day after day and talking about godly things, feeling safe. But the Lord doesn't have that program in mind for him. This, by the way, is what I think the gospel most purposely does whenever the love of Christ, the saving power of Jesus, enters into our lives. It does not intend for you and me to withdraw from the real world. And understand what I'm saying. He doesn't intend for us to do church all the time. He intends for us to go home, to go back to the places where we work, to the places where we go to school, to the communities where we have neighbors, and to exhibit, both by conversation and conduct, what great things the Lord has done for us. When Jesus opens the door, he sends us back to normalcy to make our witness to the people we know and love. It's as simple as that. So here's a man who was desperate, and the Savior opens the door, and he leaves that place a new person. In Ethiopia that day, I stood there with this small child in my arms, going through what the doctor told me to do, locked into the eyes of this father who was desperate, who couldn't open the door by himself. And I'm thankful that I'm able to say this morning, I opened the door. It's just a picture to me of how often Jesus wants to open the doors of our lives and use us to open the doors of other people's lives. It's really something we need to think about every time we come into the presence of Christ. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you for opening the door for so many of us. Thank you for giving us new life, new direction, new hope, a new sense of purpose. Perhaps, Lord, in any of us today, there are doors which need to be opened, which we've kept shut or have been shut on us, and we long to overcome those kind of things which would make us more useful to you and more reflective of the love of Christ. So for each of us, young and older alike, be our door opener today, and we will give you the thanks in Jesus' name.
Thanks again for tuning in to Sermoncast. We hope you enjoyed this week's message. For more podcasts, you can visit ccnh.org and subscribe to our channel through the Sermoncast link. We'd also invite you to connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Christ Church of Amherst. Until next time, God bless.